You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Boston Strongcast. You're listening to episode 78, part two of our interview with Dr. Quinn Henoch. I am excited for you all to hear this. If you didn't listen to part one, that's going to be in episode 77. I'll put the link in the show notes, so make sure you go back and listen to that first before you listen to this show. Enjoy the episode, and thanks for tuning in.
I do want to talk a little bit about fatigue. This is the last topic I had on my list of things. So since you have, because you know, I know you have good relationships with your lifters, you have good conversations, you affect their expectations and you educate them on certain things. I want to hear how, you know, I know for me, when I had done it another way and I had explained to them, oh, well, you need light days because you're going to be tired at this given point in time. You know, they tended to be tired at those given points in time. But now that we have different conversations, it's kind of, you know, go into the gym, expect nothing, give everything and take what's there. I've noticed like people can go on runs in the gym before we start seeing dips in performance and they can feel like shit. And it really doesn't necessarily matter. I kind of want to hear your experiences with changing expectations on fatigue and how training kind of has gone.
I think the biggest thing for us to manage fatigue is giving the athletes flexibility and decision-making on the day-to-day. I would have a hard time explaining, you know, if you asked me what fatigue is to me, I don't know if I could answer that question because as I've mentioned, we've seen lifters who rate themselves as banged up and tired and fatigued, but performance is very high, or they weight themselves as banged up and fatigued and performance is very low, or they're rating themselves as fresh and they look like dog shit. And so I don't know this interplay between like local fatigue, systemic fatigue, mental fatigue, all these things. I don't quite understand the interplay to be able to make accurate predictions and distinctions on this stuff. And so for us, building flexibility on the day to day within the program is how we manage these things. And with the things like snatch and clean and jerk, the athletes understand that there's a balance between the technique and performance. It's a very subjective thing, but we try to educate them on thresholds. And we give them, so let's say it's a snatch and they're going to work up to, they're supposed to work up to doubles. We give ranges of external intensity load on the bar based on previous performances. And we say, so it would be like a version of giving them like an RPE range. We just don't find that RPE works all that well with something like a snatch. It's hard to say, you know, I had two left in the tank, with a snatch. Maybe your technique was just throwing the par trajectory off and you could have 10 more in the tank if you just cleaned up your pull a little bit. But so that's why we don't use it, but we use intensities based on their prior performances. So if they can work up to a lift on let's say it's a day where they're just not feeling as sharp, they still kind of have a bottom to shoot for. If that makes sense, it affords them on a day that's not so good to still get some good training in. And they also have built in opportunities in which the top end of that range, if they're feeling good, is more than last week. And if we're there and they're looking sharp, then that top end range kind of goes out the window and we let them go. We let them kind of chip away at that. So it really is take what your body gives you on that particular day. Because if they're brushing whatever threshold that the body gives them on any particular day, what we find is that the deloads and the good days and the bad days, it all just kind of averages out. We know that if it's a bad day today and maybe it's two bad days in a row, there's probably going to be an upswing. If you're on one of your streaks, like what you mentioned, Kevin, where your lifter is just killing it, at some point there's probably going to be a downswing, but who cares? Because we're not married to what's on the paper. So again, short answer, long answer to a short answer is that we try to give them flexibility and options within the daily program that allows them to get a training effect, regardless of if it's a good day or a bad day. They're still getting practice with the movement. And as long as internal intensity is still high, as long as they feel they're still working hard, that's about as much as we can ask. The challenge is if we're not there, because I do think there's some value to actually watching them. And if they're missing their snatches, we can clean up technique a little bit, or we can give a little bit of guidance. I think maybe drop a few kilos, get a couple reps here, then work yourself back up. Or if they make it and they're looking good, yeah, push it today. You know, this is a day that we can take advantage of, that type of thing. So it is nice to be there in the moment, but if we can get the athlete to understand training, just training as a skill, and be able to make kind of their own decisions, then I think that really takes care of things, and that allows them some flexibility within the program.
Yeah, there's power in self-efficacy. And I think with the coach being there too, if you load the bar for them, I guarantee you that their chances of hitting a lift that might be tough on a shitty day are probably increased, because you guys have a good relationship. They believe in you as the coach, and they know that you know that they can hit that weight. I think that goes a long way into increasing performance as well.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, with the question was about fatigue. I mean, we're just looking at trends. We're always telling them, don't get too high on the good days. Don't get too low on the bad days. Because if you go on the day to day, you drive yourself insane. And we also tend to only focus on the bad days. Like, you could have a whole week of good days in a row and just feel like Superman. And then you have one shitty day in the gym that's like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Can't lift shit today. It's like, come on. So it's fatigue, unless we're seeing trends like the entire week, you know, you're stringing together 4 or 5 days in a row. You're looking slow. You're looking weak. Like, the weights are just kind of folding you up, and you're also, I'm lethargic. Sleep quality is not great. This is the type of thing where it's like, okay, things have accumulated to the point where, something probably needs to change. That doesn't necessarily mean the program itself needs to completely flip on its head. It might be a time where it's, you know what, let's just pull back. We'll have a transition week, and then we'll switch it up completely. But, you know, if they're in the midst of prepping for a meet coming up soon, I don't necessarily know if you want to flip the program on its head. You might still do the same things that I just said. It's just auto-regulation. You just happen to feel like, shit, we just need to ride this out. We need to be even more in tune with where your daily thresholds are, like where your movement thresholds are. So I guess as I'm talking about this, I don't necessarily know if even seeing like multiple days in a row of poor performance necessarily changes the plan, if we understand and assume that there's going to be an upswing. I think it just depends on where you are in your training. It depends on the athlete. And maybe, like, you know, past incidences of these types of things happening.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with that. I think their goals, right? If you want to be elite in this sport and compete with the best of the best, what you're willing to train through, I think, is a is a huge part of it. And I think as a coach going through that process with them. So we have a saying in the gym, there is no good and bad. There just is. So understanding that there's, you know, don't get too high, don't get too low, just, you know, keep training hard. And I have this, so this was told to me by, I have a friend, she is a professor out here at Springfield College, and she worked under William Kramer, who was an endocrinologist at UConn. I think he's at Ohio State now, who said that he thinks that strength just builds in the background, kind of like a storm, that it doesn't happen incrementally. And I mean, I guess this guy actually went and he weighed and measured his baby every single day to kind of prove that he was right to himself, which is kind of nuts, but awesome at the same time. So, you know, we've talked about this being a nonlinear process. So you can't have peaks without valleys. And I kind of, what I've noticed with my group is there's just these like spikes and valleys that happen for a while. And then all of a sudden there's a huge PR. Like there aren't these like little incremental increases that occur. They might be these little incremental increases and decreases that are happening in the background for a period of time before something big happens. And I think what I was getting stuck in before is I was taking these incremental increases, you know, these little 5-pound increases, patting myself on the back and thinking that we were doing the best that we could. And like, this is what we should be doing all the time. But I think I was just catching it with those little spikes in the background. And I'm curious if you've seen anything similar with your lifters tracking their performances.
We definitely see that type of thing, especially in like the snatch and the clean and jerk. It seems like when the body's clicking, those lifts, like if you have a good snatch day, it's like, holy shit. You know, if you could just feel like that all the time, like the rate of force, like your timing, everything is good, is coordinated to the point where it's, if you could just bottle that up, you know, you'd have the secret. We do see similar things. And it's an education process with them, because athletes do think that it should be a linear-ish thing. It should be a linear process, especially if they're close to being a beginner, because in the beginning, it pretty much was linear. Every time they stepped into the gym, no matter what you were doing, it was better than the last time, or, you know, things like that. And so they have these preconceived notions, but I still think that's why it's important to have built-in flexibility. You know, if it's like, if we take the John Kiley approach and say, you've got flexibility within the daily program to deal with threat or opportunity. And if a movement like the snatch is, it's sub-maximal. So there are days for opportunities that maybe are afforded a little bit more often, because it's, you know, again, relatively light deadlift. It's a relatively light squat. And if your timing is clicking on that given day, then you can, I mean, really on any given day, you can have a decent snatch day, and depending on who you are, you know, work close to a max. And, so we are seeing just kind of like these fluctuations, like, oh, it's kind of a good day with like squats and pulls, where you're having these ebbs and flows. But like you said, they probably always have that. That's not necessarily an increase in strength just because you added 2.5 kilos from last week or the week before. You probably had that back then. You just didn't do it. But it does, when you're looking at like over time, these little ebbs and flows add up, and then it's the accumulation of that for whatever reason on any given day where you can actually express the accumulated fitness. That's the day that you're talking about where the, it's like, bam, you have a huge PR. But it kind of goes back to what we talked about with just consistency. If you're stringing together consistent training, be it variation, lighter variation, but regardless, like you're going to have those days are going to be, you're going to have more of those days than somebody who's got these peaks and valleys in general, in their training. So We are seeing those ebbs and flows. I think it depends. It's athlete dependent. I think the more experienced the athlete, maybe the more infrequently you tend to see those things. Maybe that's something that you could speak on too, because I know you work with some pretty high level athletes. I think variation, that's why variation is powerful, because it's like that novel stimulus. I think novelty is really powerful. And I think that you don't necessarily have to have these crazy increases or spikes in the competition just over the course of training. In the competition lifts, you can have these days that you're talking about with variations. And I think there's still value in that for people, like mentally, you know, even though it's not the squat, bench, dead competition lifts, or it's not the snatch, clean, and jerk from the floor, full lift, maybe it's from the blocks. But hell, you know, a PR from the blocks is fun too. And it gives you a chance to express the qualities that you have accumulated with these ebbs and flows. The overall trend is probably still up. And so I think that stuff matters. And, we definitely do see that. This just hold the line, and then boom.
Yeah. I think for the, you know, I'm just like going through some examples in my head. For the ones that have been lifting longer, I think those ebbs and flows before the big jump just take longer. Like Alyssa, who she'll be editing this podcast. She hit her first 3-plate squat around last summer and then got it up to around 325 by October. But that 325 on any given day could have been there regardless. And it's just been kind of, and that was a big jump from what she had hit before. So then there's just been these like little peaks and valleys from that point till basically now. And she hit this week a high bar wide stance squat of 345. 36 hours later, turns around and hits. So I do these very long concentric tempo squats. So it was 305. So 5 seconds on the way up at 340 pounds, 36 hours later. Like it just kind of like in the background, that 315 to 325 range was kind of her one rep max for a long period of time. And now all of a sudden in these extremely difficult variations for her, she's hitting 20 pound PRs and repeating that effort, you know, less than 2 days later. And we'll bring the comp squats back in and we'll start them at fives and then taper them down to ones for her competition. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's another 20 pounds there by the end of that. And that's like in that short amount of time, that's where you just see that like little explosion. We call it riding a wave here. Like all of a sudden you hit this big number. And then the next few weeks, because of the way, you know, chances are your one rep max, even at the beginning of that, was much higher. So maybe she's capable of hitting the 365 now, just hasn't touched a comp squat in a while. And like each week you're just hitting those like rep PRs and just gaining confidence. And then it's there. There's been so many moments like that that I can remember for a lot of my lifters.
Do you think it's sometimes it's hard if you feel that an athlete is well, they're just kind of like holding the line. They haven't had that jump in a while, but you feel that if you just keep on doing what we're doing, that jump is going to come, but you're also starting to sense that they're getting bored or frustrated. And do you find it challenging to like vary their training just for the sake of variation so they don't get bored, versus vary the training because that's what you think you should actually be doing to boost their performance?
Oof.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Sometimes it's a little bit of both. I very rarely just vary it for the sake of varying it. But I think for me, like that, there's a conversation. And, you know, I just hit my first squat PR in almost a year. So I literally haven't PR'd my lifts since July 4th of last year. So I think me going through that and being able to be like, hey, stop complaining. You hit a PR 3 months ago. It's been 9 months for me. Like being able to meet them at their level and have that conversation and just, you know, I think in the past I made the mistakes of, well, this isn't working, so I need to change these things. And like now it's more of just like, hey, these things happen no matter how long it could go on for a year. It could go on for 2 years. Like, people's lifts stall out for a period of time, but not to change drastically, keep effort high, try to keep motivation as high as possible, and just keep plugging away. So, like, you know, the saying that I always say to them, like, just keep coming, and like, eventually it will turn around. In a lot of cases, I'll ask them what they feel they need, and I'll try to give them those things. So like, it may go against everything, like, oh no, I think, you know, these exercises will be better, but they want to do this. I'll be a little bit more lenient in those cases to be like, yeah, let's do this. I'll give you these. Let's build some confidence. I also might not use a variation in that case that's really hard for them. I might give them variations that they have higher success with, and just kind of let them touch those heavier weights and get a little bit more confidence and try to get some momentum rolling forward. If that makes sense. I don't know if you do similar things.
No, it does make sense. I like that you asked them that, because I think that makes people cringe sometimes, like asking or hearing a coach say, I ask the athlete what they want, because we're supposed to be the authority, right? I do that too. And if anything, even if you don't end up implementing anything that they said, it at least gives them a chance, that at least lets them know that you're listening, that you hear them, that their input does matter. Like, asking that question, I think that's important. In weightlifting, we can do things, and you can do this, it's just variation. And we talk about this constraints-led approach, is like, how can we take the task and alter it just a bit to make it different, but still, you know, come up with the same solution. So if you're stalling out in your snatch, maybe we do, instead of just doing more snatches, we can do something very similar, but we add a little wrinkle. Maybe we do a pull plus a snatch. Maybe we do a snatch plus overhead squat. If it's the clean and jerk, maybe we're doing, and your jerk is the limiting factor. You could do it one of two ways. You could do two cleans and a jerk, where it's like, if you're able to do that and work up to a load that's somewhat close to your best clean and jerk, then you can start to have these conversations. It's like, look, you just cleaned that twice. You know, so your legs are a little bit tired and you stuck that jerk. Imagine when we pull that out. So the variations themselves start to, they starts to play into that, just even mentally. You know, you just did a pull plus a snatch at 90%, you know, imagine we take that pull away. You're going to be really, really strong. So we can use these subtle constraints and manipulate the task just enough to, perturb the system, quote unquote, but just re-alter the ship course just enough. It doesn't have, they don't always have to be these drastic, turn the program on its head types of things. Just little changes here and there to switch up the stimulus, both physically and mentally, give them something new to shoot for. Because it's kind of fun to chase your old competition lift PR with an added element. It makes you really feel like you're about to just stomp that old PR. Like, if you can do a pull plus a snatch at your old snatch PR, or you can do a clean and jerk plus a jerk at 95%, you know, of your one rep max clean and jerk. I think those types of things can be really, really powerful.
Yeah. And I think that's the, that actually may be the benefit of variation, is you're training in harder positions and you get these numbers that are close to, and you just know deep down inside that, like, I can smash my previous max because I just hit this. You know, if a high bar wide stance squat was easier, you'd be doing that on the platform, and people just, they don't do that. One thing I tend to do too, when people get stuck, is this is when I'll actually apply more volume. So we tend to use like lower frequencies at first. Yeah. And then when it gets stuck, that's when I'll increase exposure. So maybe we're only, you know, squatting twice, but maybe I'll add a second squat on day one. And it's just like, I know this sucks right now and everything's hard and everything feels like shit, but you know, the weights are pushing you harder. You got to push back harder, and like, we'll train harder through those. And there tends to be a lot of peaks on the other side other side of that too. And like, sometimes I drop a day off too. Like, it's like, hey, let's just focus on coming in 3 days instead of four and really pushing it hard on those 3 days and take it from there. So just like you said, it comes down to the individual, the conversations that you have, knowing them as an individual too, because maybe they have stuff going on outside of the gym that like getting to the gym is starting to become more difficult. But if you cut a day off, they, you know, it's like, hey, thanks. You're cutting a day off. I'm going to come in and work harder because I know I have less opportunities to actually do this within the week now. And I get more free time to hang out with my family or whatever it may be. I think it's great.
Yeah. You mentioned the high volume day as a way to just kind of switch things up, almost to just jumpstart the adaptive process. But that's, you know, that's probably why we do that intuitively after a meet. We do, it's going to be a high volume block. We're accumulating. And of course the thought is that you're going to build hypertrophy. You're going to build fitness in these types of things. And a lot of times that works, you know, that just, that process, that block linear approach, but it's a slightly different focus. Like you're throwing that in just to kind of jumpstart. You're not doing it because, okay, this is going to be a hypertrophy day. You know, we're going to build your muscle in this, at this point of the year. It's something just that is going to create some type of adaptive response because it's a stimulus that they have not gotten in a while. You could say the same thing. It's exactly why, you know, on the flip side in bodybuilding land, where the argument's the same, it's just flipped. It's like, well, I love, you know, heavy blocks or, you know, low volume, heavy blocks, to build some strength. If you're stronger, if you lift more weight, then you can do more reps with heavier weights, and that's more volume, and then that's more muscle mass. And maybe for them, it's the same idea. Maybe that doing a heavy, low volume block every now and then is just something different to almost just like resensitize them to the stimulus that actually matters to their sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And like with these higher volume days, I'm not even changing my focus. So they'll squat, they'll get their 1 to 2 heavy sets in, they'll bench or something in between, or take a little bit of a, you know, maybe even like a 20-minute break, and then they'll squat again for those 1 to 2 hard sets. Like, I'm not increasing reps, lowering the load. Like, you're going to push it hard just as if it was your first time in, and like, and you know, we're just going to continue to get after and just trust, embrace the process, and know that if we train hard, one of my favorite Muhammad Ali quotes was, I think it was Arnold Schwarzenegger had asked him how many sit-ups he does. And he goes, I don't know how many sit-ups I do. I only start counting when it starts to hurt. So like, you know, and like, we're not talking about training through like physical pain here, but like, it's frustrating. It's hard, but you know, just putting your head down and doing it, and hard work is always, always, always rewarded at the end. But absolutely, like, you could absolutely just decide to do a higher rep hypertrophy block. And I think this is why they work. It's a novelty. It's a change of stimulus. And that's probably the most important thing. Loneki did to me. So I remember Kylie mentioning that the periodization research, he tends to believe that they all work because of variation. And this goes with what I've witnessed too. Like, you know, you're doing 10s and 6s and 8s while one group's just doing 10s the whole time. Loneki thinks that those work because you're getting closer to 1 RM. So you're training that skill of strength more in a periodized block than you would just doing 10s the whole time. And that's an extremely interesting viewpoint on it. That's made me think quite a bit about the way that I structure some of those things.
So is that a discussion towards like a daily undulating paradigm?
Yeah. Like
so a 10-8.
Yeah, I think how most of the periodization research works is like one group will just do the same reps for however many weeks, and then the others tend to do 10s week one, 8s week two, 6s, and it starts to taper down. So his argument is because the group is getting closer to 1 RM, they're training the skill of strength more than the other group, and that's why that they see the bigger results. And Kylie says it could be the variation. Maybe it's both. Right. That like, you know, if we vary it, but train at or near, maximal weights, we see greater benefits. And that's where like my thinking comes from with the way that I do my programming. We do heavy fives and heavy fours and heavy threes and heavy twos and heavy singles. And it's basically just for that reason. It seems to be, if I feel like I'm throwing multiple darts as opposed to one.
Is that over the course of weeks?
Yeah. Yeah. Each, so,
yeah.
So we'll start like week one with fives, week two with fours. And like, there's that linear process with that. If I feel they sandbag their fives, so they're supposed to take 1 to 2 sets in an RPE of like 8.5 to 9.5. And I'd rather them overshoot than undershoot in these cases here. So if they get a set of five that I'm like, and they're putting RPE 8.5 on there, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, we need to match up how you feel this feels and what I'm looking at. I'll give them fives again with a heavier weight.
Mm.
But other than that, we just kind of taper right down.
Yeah. We do something similar, which, you know, it's not, and again, we talked about it in the beginning, you know, these things don't, when you get down to brass tacks and you look at the programs, they're not all that different. What's different is maybe the time course. Like, cause you're starting at higher, slightly higher reps, and you're tapering down to the more specific skill. The difference is that if you start to see trends in one direction or the other, then you make a change. You're not just locked in, you know, to this 16-week progression, just hoping things turn around. And so that's one of the biggest differences here. It's not all that different either. We do something similar. We even may go, depending on how long, because sometimes these meets can be back to back. Like, you do the meet to qualify for the national meet, and then you do the national meet, and then that's like, it's been 12 weeks that you've been attempting to hold a peak. And so, you know, we may start higher volume, even in the eights and tens, but it's mostly because they are so burnt from going really, really heavy. And we can let them go slow and let them feel like muscle burn instead of their joints. Cause you know, you feel like you got hit, run over by a truck sometimes after getting ready for a weightlifting competition. I'm sure it's the same. It's the same in powerlifting. And so it's more of a mental break. And it's a physical stimulus that allows them to then resensitize to the things that matter for the sport.
Yeah. And those mental breaks are important. And, you know, we lift heavy all the time. Like, it's just kind of like, it's easier with a group too. Like, I have 50 people and they're all just kind of like, you know, you could be having a bad day and you come in there and like, there's, you know, I have a 52 kilogram lifter who's squatting over 300 pounds. Like, when you start seeing things like those happen, it's like, all right, I'm going to load this up because I don't want a 114 pound female out squatting me today. You know, like it becomes an infectious in the group. And, but there are days when people need a mental break. Like, we do, you know, 3 to 4 moderate weight sets and, you know, crush some accessories if you want to, don't if you don't want to. And we kind of move on from there. No, go ahead.
No, you go.
You know, and I think, as long as us as coaches are having those conversations and we're changing their expectations, and I'll tell you, like, from the way that we've been training, people just get lifting heavy just becomes the norm. Like, it doesn't become an added stressor seeing extra weight on the bar. It just, like, you know, people are grinding through reps and they're smiling halfway through when they know that they got them. And like, you know, they'll even smile if they miss, 'cause it's like, oh shit, that got heavy quick. You know, like, it just, we're not doing that many sets anymore either. And we're spending less time in the gym. And like, I think those things add into it too. Like, I don't, you know, I know some of these studies show that like, oh, dropout rate from lifting heavy is high. Like, we're competitive power lifters. That's the sport. We do it because we like it. And it just seems like we have way more fun. And like, I don't see that from my end being an issue.
it's one of the issues with looking at literature, strength training literature, hypertrophy literature, and trying to extrapolate that exactly how it's done, you know, in volume, if we're going to take the totality of hypertrophy literature, it's volume. And it matters what you're seeing with your people is truly what matters. So I like what you said in the very, very beginning of the conversation, which was, if I didn't know any of these, any of the evidence, if I hadn't read any papers, what do I know works? And you can always do more. So if you're not lifting as heavy, or you're not lifting as often, you're spending less time in the gym, well, now you have the option to lift more and spend more time in the gym if you feel that would be of benefit. Right. You give yourself a little, you start trimming the fat a little bit, and you hone in on what really, really works. You concentrate most of your effort on the qualities that you know is going to prepare them for the goals that they want. And with that, inherently allows you flexibility. If you're already crushing your peeps with high volume, high frequency, and they're not responding, well, really the only direction to go is to pull back. Now you've got to wait. Now you've got to pull back. You've almost got to kind of feeling like you're starting over. And then your goal is to what? Build back up to more and more and more.
That's a good point.
Which it doesn't necessarily have to be like that. Anecdotally, we've made the mistake, and I've made the mistake with people where they're on a 4-day a week weightlifting program and they're doing great. And we're like, you know what? Just imagine how good they'd be on a five day a week weightlifting program. And as soon as we make that change, that's when the wheels start to come off. Now, it's possible that if we give it more time, then they will acclimate and adapt, and they'll crush it on a 5-day a week program. But the decision to move from 4 to 5 days a week was not based on anything other than we assumed that more frequency was better, because what we were doing before was working. And I think people are too quick to change the plan because it's been some type of arbitrary amount of time where they feel like they should, as opposed to just riding the wave, squeezing out as much juice as possible with what you're doing.
And that's what you get when you get stuck, right? So you're running a high volume program 4 days a week, you get stuck, we need more. So you add that fifth day, and then they start to dislike training, little nagging things start to pop up, or they're still stuck. And even if, you know, performance maybe goes up a little, maybe stalls out at all, even if they don't have nagging things, where do you go now? So you get stuck in this like frame of mind and this tiny little box that if you believe these things to be true, when you run into problems, that's when they're going to end up just jumping to another coach because you're just not well equipped to actually handle those things. And there was a study that we discussed. So for overtraining, it seems extremely difficult to try to get it with a barbell in the literature. In one study, they did a 10 rep max squat every single day for 14 straight days, but had to include an endurance component to it in order to actually elicit overtraining pieces. And it took 14 straight days of doing that to actually get there. So I think, you know, if our expectations and our beliefs and, you know, if we just expect nothing and understand that like these things are so dynamic and we just don't know shit when it comes to this. And if people understand that going in, like, I think it just totally changes the game and what you're able to do with people. And like, it's more fun, man. Like we have fun in the gym, and I think that's huge.
One thing I'm conceptually starting to think, use in my mind a little bit more, is the idea of stimulating reps. And it's not even, you know, this is something in the hypertrophy lore, and more of, if you really read about stimulating reps specifically, it's like myo rep, rest pause type of shit, where you do a set to essentially to failure so that then the other sets can actually have a stimulus, create a stimulus, something like that. But the thing I'm conceptually starting to think about, and it seems like something that you are mentioning with hard sets, like we're doing less, I'm programming less sets straight across where I would in the past, especially when I was more percentage based, we'd work up to triples in the snatch at a certain percentage. And then you would just do four sets of three at that weight. And you get to thinking like, let's say it's 80%. And that, what would that actually do? Well, it would maybe provide some type of consistency with moderate loads, but is that going to brush your threshold? What I want you to be consistent in your technique at the loads that test your technique. So what I started to shift much more towards was like, what am I trying to stimulate here? And so instead of sets of four sets of three at a fixed load, it's now we'll work up to that intensity threshold that starts to test your coordinative pattern for the skill of the snatch. We'll work up to that. We might hit a couple sets there because maybe that first set is shaky. I want you to hit another one. I want you to smoke it. And maybe you smoke it. We might even go up from there, but maybe not. Maybe we find that threshold and then we can back off a little bit and work on being super, super sharp. So we'll do a few, two or three drop sets where you really smoke it and your movement is fast and it's crisp. And so we're working on that rate of force. And so it's kind of solidifying that coordinative pattern. So so now I'm programming in a way that's kind of going above and below that generic moderate load set straight across where we're pushing the threshold and then we're dropping to a load that you can just smoke it. So we're working on kind of both ends, if that makes any type of sense. But yeah, it goes back to kind of the skill of the movement.
That is literally what we were doing. So we'd work up to the hard sets and then we'd hit a few back offs. I actually just took out back offs from it because I realized the people who were getting more nagging things were doing more back offs, like 3 to 4 back off sets. And what I was realizing too is they tend to be the ones that, oh, I need 3 to 4 sets to work on my technique. So we started to, it allowed them to hold on to that, like that perfectionism, that like attitude of everything needs to be perfect. And I started to think that there's just not, because obviously like if we're going in and going to lift heavy 2 days later or the next day or something, like just cut it there. There's, you know, two sets might be better than one set, three sets might be better than two sets, but at some point more is not better. And I just kind of have this more like longer term thought process with it where it's like, you get all these warm up sets anyways, you know, focus on the technique, hit it hard with the top weights. If you feel you need one set to feel good technique, do it, but no more than that and move on.
Yeah, that's a good point with the drop. And I think that makes a lot of sense, especially too with something like a squat where it's even the drop down sets are pretty damn, they can get hard, especially after you've had hard sets. I think for a snatch, just because of what I had mentioned before where it's submaximal, those drop sets aren't all that physically stimulating or stressful, I guess I should say. Now, clean and jerk, a little bit different. So we'll do similar things with the clean and jerk. We'll work up, you know, to whatever I feel that quote unquote stimulating rep is. But because that we as weightlifters, and especially in America, we miss the jerk a lot. I like to get more practice in the jerk. And so we'll work up to whatever the prescription was for the clean and jerk and find that threshold that tests the positions and just your ability. And then we'll do back off like power clean and jerks. So they don't have to worry about catching another full clean because they're probably smoked from doing heavy clean and jerks, but they can still work on rate of force development with the power clean. They still get some practice with the jerk. We've also done it where they work up to their heavy clean and jerk. The clean and jerk is it's done. Now we take the clean out of the equation. We put them on the blocks, on the jerk blocks, and they hit a few heavy jerks at or close to what they just cleaned and jerked, just to get a few more reps in and practice with the timing of the jerk. But again, the idea for me was just taking out this a lot, not all, but a lot of this volume straight across and pushing a threshold, replacing it with actually pushing a threshold. And then if you want to get more volume, you can always back it down and accumulate. Or you could do something totally, just another variation. If we do our heavy back squats, work up to whatever our quote unquote stimulating rep is or a hard set is for the day, then we might do some tempo squats, because those are just inherently a lot lighter. They're different, but it still allows you to accumulate squat volume.
And effort's still high.
Effort's still high, exactly.
And what I like too about getting rid of the back offs is it allows me to judge performance better. So if I feel they need more sets, I can just add them in. So, you know, we could squat, bench, squat in the same day, like, you know, how I always did working with Shaco. And like, we still do some of those things now where it's like, all right, you know, if they're doing a ton of backups, it's hard for me to know, are you just tired or is this a down performance day? Like, you know, it's hard for me to manipulate some of those other options. And I just don't feel that the reward that I get, that they were getting from backups, was necessarily like worth it. But a more skilled movement, like a snatch or something, to me, that makes a little bit more sense, because it might have better carryover for them. Just, you know, I always want them leaving on a win too. So like, if they feel that they get a win from having good technical reps to walk away from, by all means, I think that is worth any cost associated with increased exposures.
I agree with you on that 100%. We don't end on misses. Exactly. Now I've kind of screwed up that before. Like, they'll have a great snatch day and they'll just like smoke their top sets and it was awesome, and they should have just ended it there. And I'll be like, all right, and I'll hit a few back offs, and they end up like missing their back off set because their mind is off. You know, they did their thing and now they have to pull on something that's still not light. And then they miss it and it looks horrible. I'm like, oh fuck. But it, you know, another way that we'll do for the snatch is the pull. We forget that, like, weightlifters, we still train the pull. It's less often about like deadlift pulling, but it's still like in the snatch in clean position. But the pull itself, like doing a powerful extension and just finishing it there, is something that we can clean up or end our snatch session with as well. So it just adds a little bit more pop, but it takes out the necessity and the load on the shoulders and the squat itself. So we'll work up two heavy snatches, hit our stimulating reps, and then we'll throw some straps on and we'll do like singles or doubles on the snatch pull with the same load, or maybe 5% more, and just really work on just rate of force development throughout and at the top of the pole, and just really, really trying to put a really hard impulse into that movement. And it's beneficial that the snatch is submaximal, because you can do a lot of those, and you start to call it when like power drops off, because you can see that, like, when you no longer have that pop at the top, but you're still only deadlifting very low loads compared to your max deadlift. So I think the sport of weightlifting affords you a little bit more leeway in regards to like drop sets or like drop variations, with an example like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And weightlifting's fascinating to me. I don't know much about the sport, but like, for those types of things that you were mentioning. Quinn, we're getting on to like an hour and 50 minutes. Alyssa's going to fucking kill me when she sees how long this is. But this was awesome. And I truly appreciate the conversation. There's a ton of great stuff in here. Let everybody know where they can find you, because you guys put out some awesome information too.
Well, thanks for having me on, man. This was a blast. So all the social medias, clinical athlete, all one word, can be found on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and clinicalathlete.com. We just launched a new website where there's like a news feed, and we post lots of stuff. Open access research articles and videos and stuff like that. It's all free on there on the website. And my Instagram handle is quinn.hennick DPT, and I'm on Twitter, something quinn.hennick something Quinn Hennick. Just put that into Twitter and I'm sure I'm the only one that pops up. It's the benefit of having a weird name. On Facebook, and yeah, you can shoot me a message on any of those platforms. And we've got our powerlifting and weightlifting barbell courses going on all over the country. So those are always fun. And
when's the first powerlifting one? That's coming up soon.
It's in two and a half weeks in Philadelphia, War Horse Barbell. John Flagg is going to be in that one. It'll be fun. I'll be there too. I'm going to be his assistant. I told him I'm your personal assistant for the whole weekend.
that should be a lot of fun. And, John's a good dude. He knows his shit. I'm glad to see you guys going around there and, spreading the good word. Guys, you can follow me on Instagram. It's KW Can, our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.